We have a lot of videos of the podcast and various other tutorials on YouTube. You can subscribe to our channel at mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. Happy mixing and enjoy the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixed Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Lo-Fi Lou. There's too much high end in that snare, dude.
Oh damn!
Yeah,
I gotta roll off at 10K.
Anyway,
actually, I would want to see an a cappella lo-fi group.
Welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to remind everyone how much thought it takes to think of like technical episodes. We both have like, we're both way too experienced to empathize and sympathize with those that are new to the craft of mixing. It's hard for us to think of the We're thinking about, and we have different focuses and different things that we're thinking about than like the beginner to intermediate, as is normal. And that's not like me saying that we're better or anything like that. It's more of like,
I mean, you may genuinely not be difficult for us.
Yeah. Like, we don't think about like how to mix male vocals. Like, that's not like a thought that we have often.
Yeah.
So It makes sense from us and our perspective why most of our episodes are pretty philosophical, but we try to balance things out and keep things technical. That being said, if you want some technical episodes almost every single week, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive for exclusive episodes of the podcast. All the exclusive episodes are $4 a month or $4 a year, and they're almost always, in fact, I think they are always technical focus. That's the one thing that I've told James, who is the host of the exclusive. Me and James do that. It's just technical concepts, technical ideas, things that you can take home and use for your sessions like today. And once you do that, you unlock all of the hundreds of episodes that we've done in the past immediately. So not only do you get two new episodes every single week, but you unlock a whole new library of messages library of past episodes. So that being said, today's episode is about what makes a compressor good.
Mm-hmm.
What makes a compressor good? So basically, how do you determine which compressor to use for this project, for this timeline, for this instance, for this track, for this whatever? Hold on, I'm trying to turn off.
Man, it just looks like you're trying to party.
Yeah, I'm trying to turn off. Hold on. There you go. I'm just trying to turn off the AC and like the remote control was not working. So we were thinking about this, and obviously here's the thing. Whether you're new to compressing or not, it's good to emphasize that there are different uses for compressor. And there's different instances where you want a different style of compressor. So like for example, sometimes you want like a really colorful, high saturation, very erratic, uncontrollable, kind of this really cool character compressor it's like kind of weird and cool and sounds different. And then there's other times that you want a compressor that you genuinely don't want to hear. Like, in the sense that, like, I want the most transparent, non-colored compressor possible. I don't want to feel or hear the sensation of any compression possible, as transparent as possible. And that's appropriate too. So when is it appropriate? What are the things that you look for in a good compressor? What makes a compressor bad or inappropriate? And I think that this is also going to be a lot of conversation of we're going to have like mock scenarios and talk about different scenarios, because I don't think that there is a end all best compressor and an end all worst compressor.
Yeah.
Lou.
Honestly, I agree. And it's kind of funny because a telling sign of this when you talk to somebody is, you know, some people like to have gear talk. I think later in the career, you have less gear talk with people sometimes. I think it kind of comes up in the moment when you're talking about certain things like, oh, I'm thinking about buying a new piece of gear. And you suddenly talk about gear at that point. But later in your career, you don't really talk about gear as much. And you start finding out that people have certain favorite pieces. One that I actually bought from DK that I kind of want to talk about, which is kind of funny. It's perfectly on this topic of like character versus transparency versus one thing or another and like minute detail differences is the DBX 160X pair that I actually bought off of you.
Yeah.
You know, because I used to have the XTs, I used to have the A's, and the X's were actually great. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was it that Jason Joshua uses the X or the XT? I can't remember.
X, yeah.
The X.
If I remember correctly.
And the funny thing is, like, would I use it on vocals? No. But I would hell yeah use it on kick and snare. Like, sometimes finding what makes a compressor good is like this little bit of character that it imparts on the audio. It's actually very thumpy and punchy and kicks and snares in that like 200 range, which actually makes it really cool for like percussion. But it's a little gritty for vocals. Like, it doesn't actually like make them clean like you maybe want in like a pop record. And depending on like if you're doing hyper pop, I don't know how clean those vocals are. You would be able to tell me more than I could. But, you know, maybe the X or the XT might be able to work in that, but maybe the A, it's still the same series of compressors. Technically, it's still the 160 line. But in the series A, it's actually a little bit cleaner and is actually a little more focused around vocals. You know, so it's kind of funny. These compressors are also not, you know, expensive. You can buy a pair of them for, on the 160Xs, roughly around like $500, maybe $600. But it's relatively cheap. And I would say that they're a little more useful on kick and snare than I would find like an 1176. While 1176 also has its own unique sound. I would use an 1176 for like a parallel snare or a parallel kick, but maybe not directly on the kick and snare. I don't know. What's your view on that?
Yeah, I think that I'm trying to figure out the best format for us to do this episode. Is it better to think of a scenario of like things that we need and then talk about which compressors work for that? Or should we just go ahead and start talking about different compressors and talking about the characteristics of that compressor and what it's appropriate for, what it's not appropriate for?
I think it's a good idea to go in the scenario route because, you know, I could go on and on about different compressors that I like for different reasons. And, you know, even at the studio, we've swapped around gear like underwear. You know, just to see what we liked and try
what?
Things.
Hold on. What was that metaphor?
You've never heard that metaphor? Like,
swap around gear like underwear? What the fuck?
Like, you know, you wear a different set of underwear every day, right? I mean.
Oh, okay. Not between us. I thought it's. No, okay. I thought the metaphor was like, we were swapping underwear. I'm like, what the hell is this kind of.
No, me and you are not swapping underwear. Okay, let's get that clear. We are not doing that in the future, nor have we ever done that in the past. Now, with that said, if you want to start the dialogue on it, no, I'm just kidding. No, but honestly speaking, yeah, like you've bought gear and returned it, you used gear and sold it, you know, we've tried many different monitors and everything has kind of a tone. So I think it would be a good idea for us to talk scenario and then highlight some pieces and why we like them and what made them good to us. Because at the end of the day, this is a very individualistic perspective view on the gear and why it worked out for one of us or maybe not for the other.
So and, I think and like personal contextual. Philosophy as well. Yeah. Like personal, there's going to be a lot of personal taste and personal philosophy into this as well. Like when I go for analog gear, what am I actually prioritizing when I'm purchasing, looking and purchasing gear? Things like that. That's more personal and philosophical by nature.
Okay, how about first this? I have a good idea for just a starting basis.
What's that?
Okay, just to set the tone of why we like certain gear. When you listen to a compressor, or let's say you have a budget of $2,000, are you going for the best brand you can possibly buy or the best tone you can possibly buy?
Those are both very high on my priority list.
Yeah.
Because like not just brand is also resale value.
Yeah.
In case I don't like it. I mean, it's popular because it must be good, right? To a certain degree.
Yep. We also acknowledge that marketing exists.
Yeah, exactly. So that being said, like just because it's popular doesn't mean that it's great, but at least it's consistent and I kind of have an idea and I can resell it if I don't like it. The problem with having like a lot of my gear, including speakers, the couple of the compressors that I have, they're boutique. And the problem is like when things are really boutique, I'm committed to those. Like they have to sound that much better because there's no resale market for that. People don't know about that product.
Like I got a really good deal on mine.
Yeah, so that's something to think about as well. But first off, let's get into some compression styles. This is digital or analog here. What we're not going to do is talk about the difference between opto, FET, Verimu, etc. WPM with pulse modulation, etc. We're going to talk about more like other concepts like clean versus colored and what that means. All right, I think... Okay, let's say, depending on the song, I do think that actually... Hold on, Lou. Never mind. Four vocals. Nah, it depends on the song, dude.
It really depends on the song.
Because, like, right, even on the vocals.
Let me paint you a picture. You're working on a live group, right? All right, you're working on live instruments. You're not working with any samples. You got to compress the drum bus. Recorded live. You got to compress the drum bus. What are you typically reaching for first?
How heavy is the track? Is
we're
it a
doing
rock track?
We're doing a rock track. We want that Joe Bonham big reverb, but natural room reverb sound.
Dude, you know what you can't go wrong with on like a drum bus? You can't go wrong with is a distressor.
Oh my God, yeah.
Distressors, plugins or analog. It's just, you can't go wrong with that. It sounds so good, especially for something that's more aggressive in style, more rock aggressive.
Yeah.
The snap that you get.
I love the quickness on the release of it.
Yeah,
I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I think for that, the characters that I'm looking at, the reason why I like the distressor is the transients, how it deals with transients, creates or lessens. I really like the sound of the fast attack on distressors. Distressors does this thing with the transient where it makes a snare sound like a shotgun.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not every compressor does that. Like it sounds really good when you compress it a lot. You can color it with saturation. It's can be super clean and minimal, but like it takes heavy compression very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels modern. I don't know how else is, that's such a lame description of it, but it's quick and it's modern.
I mean, yeah. It was what? This is a 90s device, 90s era device. So fairly modern compared to other units in most people's registry, but I guess it's a little long in the tooth now, technically.
Can't go wrong with a pair of distressors on a drum bus, man.
That's why I keep a pair of distressors in my rec. Like I've considered selling them for the third time, just to see if I try something new or something of that nature. Like right now, I'm actually I'm really looking at buying like a console in like the five-figure size of things. So like part of me is also like contemplating like what I absolutely want to keep, and the distressors have always landed on the never sell list.
Yeah, for serious.
Yeah. There's a reason that you find them in every studio. And part of it is exactly like how you spoke about it right now. It's like the transient shaping, the ability to actually get different distortion tones out of it also with distortion 2 and distortion 3, which one emulates tube, the other one emulates... No, is it one's transformer and one's tape? I believe
I have
it
no
is.
Idea.
I forget what I have it no is. Idea. To be honest, most times I just click on it and if it sounds good, that's the one. Once again, hitting back to like our last episode about attention to detail, at a certain point, it's like, who cares if it's distortion 2 or distortion 3? Does it sound good?
Yeah, but that's the thing too. It's
I like
the
versatility of it.
Yeah, I want it to feel compressed. Like if I want something to feel compressed, if I want to do lots of compressions, if I want it to smash something, the distressor's a good go-to.
Oh yeah.
And I think for like drum bus, for especially like with rock or punk, like that's a really great thing to do. You know, like in a mastering scenario, if it's already a really good mix, and first off, I don't do a lot of compression in the master bus. But if I do, I'm looking for something most of the time, I'm either looking for something, no, there's scenarios where I go for the most colored thing too. But I was going to say like, that's a really good time to do something super ultra transparent. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes I want a compressor that I cannot hear. Like that's a good thing. Like I'm seeing the gain reduction happening. I cannot hear it, or as close to cannot hearing it as possible. It's super transparent. But there's also times where like I want it to kind of clip and feel that way, depending on the style of music.
Yeah. I know you mentioned in the past that with Barely Human, you do a lot of clipping.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Any sort of like hyper pop or very heavy, very loud mixing.
Yeah, when you're trying to hit -6 loofs across the board.
No, -4, dude. What are you talking about? -6 is too quiet. You know,
I just did 4 on a country record. And
that's crazy. Yeah, on a country record.
On a country record. And I'm sure you've heard of the clip to zero method. Yeah, I didn't do that exactly, but I took a couple pieces out of that and I applied it and I'm like, it sounds clean enough. I sent it to the artist and they're like, oh my God, it sounds so big. I was like, oh, thank God. Cause I thought you were going to say it's like completely killed to the max. Like he wanted it loud and I just did what I could to get it loud. But at a certain point, because it was a lot of clipping, what I liked on my master bus was the Shadow Hills compressor. Because at that point, even doing 1 dB, it's already audible.
Yeah.
Like it does this level of saturation through compression that, or I don't know if the plugin works like that, but that's how the unit is supposed to work for the most part. Like you drive into it and the compression adds a little more saturation as it goes, but it's supposed to be like this clean saturation, kind of like what the Tube Tech is marketed to be. But I kind of like how it does this hug. It kind of like everything with clipping usually feels pretty isolated because you're not really like bringing it down and all that kind of stuff. You're just shaving the top. But I really like how on the master bus, it kind of does that SSL G bus thing where it just kind of like holds it. It just does a light hug, but it does it so quickly that you have to be very light with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with how little interest I have in this topic, actually.
That's good.
Ah, dang, dude. This is like an episode that the listeners, I'm being like super open and transparent right now. This is the sort of episode that people want to hear that they're like waiting for that gets the most downloads.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally just have no interest in this topic. And
you don't like compressors, DK? You don't like them?
I love compressors. I have a ton of compressors, both analog and digital. But this is just... I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have brought this up, but there's something about it that like is bothering me. But anyway, let's talk about like I think we should. I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to talk about a compressor and tell you why I like it and why I don't.
Okay.
Like CL1B, like the real one, which sounds different from both the Mark I and the Mark II from
By a long margin. Holy
yeah,
shit.
The real one is significantly less colored. The digital ones are more colored for some reason. I don't know how that happened.
And they grab really weird.
Yeah, the release is really weird.
Yeah.
Really weird. The reason why the real CL1B is so great is because it's super transparent and it's hard to fuck up. Like it sounds smooth. It can compress quite a bit without grabbing too hard. Grabbing is the sensation of like, that's where like pumping kind of comes in.
Where you can hear the duck still holding on to the audio.
Yeah, sometimes there's like, so like for long football notes where it's like the vocalist or whatever instrumentation is like holding long notes, you can kind of hear it grab. But that's like true with any compressor to a certain degree.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, if anybody's listening to this episode, which thank you if you are, you're actually hearing me through a CL1B right now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah. There you go. And then, let's see, what else? I love 1176s because they're very fat. They do this, like, they're kind of dirty. I love how dirty they are.
Yeah.
Like, the color of them, this mid-range FET color that they add, typically a lot. I love how fast it is. Mm-hmm. So, it crushes, it feels more like a limiter. It crushes the transient in a completely different way.
They're actually pretty quick to get aggressive.
Yeah, they get aggressive really quickly. They're easy to get aggressive. I like that. LA2As are great for smooth and slow. Smooth and slow style compression is more on the transparent end as far as compression style goes. The downside to an LA2A is the attack and release times are dictated on the photocell and isn't adjustable. That being said,
There's a level of adjustability in the gain reduction circuit. Like, as you turn it up, it changes the curve. But that's committing
to look back at the manual again. But in general, there's like that there's not like a very nice, obvious control of it that doesn't take some tweaking.
That's also
great. I actually really like the LA2A because honestly, like, I like not having that many options.
Yeah.
I like that I'm stuck with one sound and it's my job to determine whether I like it or not. That makes it such an easy decision for me. I love that.
Yeah. You know what I found recently? Because about a year ago, I had done... I don't suggest this for everybody, but there comes a time where I feel some people feel the need for this. You just set your computer new. And you reinstall Pro Tools for the first time. You reinstall your Waves plugins for the first time. You know, just go back to what it is you need. Because at a certain point, your plugin library has got too much going on. There's too many things installed on your computer. And you just, if you want a good refresher for your computer without having to buy a new one, back up your files. Back up everything on your computer. Make a copy of your drive. Put that shit in storage. And just start fresh. Your computer will fly significantly faster already. You won't need a new computer. But there was a time where I opened my plugin library. They're like, you know, you're just trying to add an insert. And I'm looking at my list. I'm like, there's so much shit I don't use that I actively paid for. Because at some point, it felt like it served a purpose. But the longer you go, the more you like being limited to certain things that you know very well. And you can move very quickly because of that. And that's where I think, like, I know you're a big fan of the Magic Death Eye, something I haven't tried yet. But I haven't tried it, not because I don't think it's a good product and it's not going to impress me, but rather it's because there's so many things that I use that get the job done for me in a way that I like, that adding a new one feels like I'm taking time to try something new to see if it's going to work out for my use or not. rather than, you know, honestly speaking, like just wanting more plugins. Because at a certain point, I just wanted to get rid of more plugins than I actually had. That's where like this conversation is actually kind of good. It's like, what makes a good compressor? Why are we choosing to use some and not use others? Or not necessarily that they are bad, but what purpose did they not fulfill?
That's true. All right. Yeah, that I do have also a lot of compressors that I don't use, and I kind of go through my list every once in a while. My plugins list is insane.
Yeah.
It's also, you know, it doesn't help that we're minor influencers who get given licenses all the time. None of which you activated for some reason, but like...
Well, I activated the majority, but like, you know, Isotope hit me up. I don't know what the hell happened with my... with my Insight, but Insight suddenly just doesn't work. But everything else in Ozone 11 does.
Yeah, dude. Anyway, so let's see what else. There's when I'm going for like analog gear, personally, I want the hard to control, erratic, I'm not sure what's happening, indescribable ones, or just like clipping ones, heavy saturation ones. That's kind of my chaos. Personal. Yeah. So like. The bus compressor that I have is the Wes Audio bus compressor. And the reason why I like it, it's kind of like this. First off, it's a VCA compressor. So no tubes. So one thing that I'm thinking about is maintenance. If it's tubes, I'd have to change them out every once in a while. If it's VCA, maintenance is easy. There's also two levels of saturation in this device. There's an actual tonal harmonic distortion knob, so you can add in distortion. Mm-hmm. So kind of like raise the RMS or the average loudness there. It has decent compression. The compression itself is all right, but the second cool thing is there's an iron selectable iron transformer. I think it's a Carnhill transformer, like the same thing as Neve.
Mm-hmm.
But what's different from the other transformer output devices is that this one has a pad. So you can pad the output to drive the output transformer even more.
Nice.
So you can pad it like 15 dBs.
So and then, pad is post-transformer.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly. So nice. That way it's like you can actually push it. So there's a second level of distortion. Really cool. And also it's like plug-in control, digital... digitally controlled analog, so it's great, easy for recall, easy to workflow. I have this one called the Kahayan Solid 4000 that I immediately fell in love with. It's a saturation device. It's a Spanish company. Nobody knows about them. This is kind of one of my secret weapons here.
Actually, it's not many guitarists know about them, but that's a separate thing.
Yeah, this is the unit is supposed to emulate hitting the master fader in an SSL 4000 console really hard.
Yeah.
So it's the saturation, the clipping that is happening in an SSL console. I have a picture of the insides that I took. I need to look at it again, tell you exactly what's going on. But it has this, it's not a compressor, but it's compressing from the saturation, the inability to recreate the transients. So there's compression happening and it's hard to describe. It's very subtle. It does this thing where it's like, I don't know exactly what it's doing, but it sometimes it lifts the song. Sometimes it doesn't. Creates glue sometimes it doesn't. And I love that it does something that I don't know exactly what it's doing. Then there's this last one that I have is the 170, or sorry, the, what is this? The Electric & Company EC5B, which is a modern retake of the 175B, which is the very, very Mu original version before the 1176. So it's a Putnam design using tubes and very Mu compression. That was the predecessor to the 1176. So it's 175, which turned into the 176, which turned into the 1176 after it got rid of the tubes. The 175, this thing is dope. It's like it's very Mu, so the ratio changes, but it's offset. This one specifically is set to a higher starting ratio, so it's like 12 to 1, so it's like a limiter. The attack and release times are really fast for very Mu. And the cool thing is like this thing is hard to control. It turns so easily into way too much compression. And it is so full of characters, so fun. There's no plugin that sounds like this just because it's way too erratic. How do you say? This is a really bad analogy. But it's like that really schizophrenic, but also so fun, like
girlfriend.
You know how we had a girlfriend in high school that's like really fucking crazy, but that's part of the reason why we love her, because it's so exciting to be with her.
Yeah.
Not at all. Not at all. Like, you don't want to have kids with this person, but it's just fun because you have no idea what's happening. That's this compressor.
Yeah.
Right now, it's just fun. Luckily, that's a bad analogy in so many different ways. I'm so sorry. But the point is, this is so fun. I don't know what it's going to do. The color that it has, the saturation that it gives. You can also bypass the compression. It just drives the input and output tubes.
I like that.
And transformers. I showed you this. Yeah, when we were playing around with it. Yeah. It sounds fantastic. Really good. And the color of it. And I'm looking for, when it comes to analog gear, I'm looking for things that are colorful that I want it to surprise me. I don't want to know exactly how it's going to work. Whereas like digital, it's like I'm going for tools where it's like, I know how it works. I know how it's going to sound. My best guess is that it's going to work for this. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what do you think, Lou? What do you prioritize when getting compressors, both digital and analog?
When it comes to digital, I'm not looking for a complete tone shift. I think that there are some that do that for me. One of them being the El Rey compressor from Acoustica.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, I love it. And I've vocalized this before, which is like, this is not something you necessarily look for in compression, but this one gives. It's a cleaning up of nasally tones. You know, sometimes you're working with like a nasally vocalist. They're belting notes and they just have that, you know, they got a lot of nose in their track. Kind of like, I'm going to start saying that in the future. You got a lot of nose in that track. but it does a really good job at taming it. Like, it's a nice,
yeah, it's got a very obvious, it's a very obvious mid-range scoop.
Yeah, like, but it's
tube,
like
a good tube compressor. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it reminds me of the Double Wide from Retro Instruments, which I loved. That was one of those compressors where you hear it and you're like, you know what? This is butter. I love it. It's smooth. You can use it on just about anything. It primarily worked out for me for female vocals. And that's where I really liked it. I remember I would take that with me in a lunchbox along with a 512 preamp and a Mog EQ, an EQ4. And I would use that as my vocal chain with Ari Lennox for a minute, because like, she can be a little bit piercing sometimes, but there was like something about this compressor that really smoothed it out. So I started using it as like a smoothing tool. Instead of reaching for an EQ, if I knew I needed compression and my main issue was like something being a little harsh in the mid-range, the Double Wide was one of those that actually kind of fit the bill. But once I found the El Rey, I found myself really enjoying it. I started using the El Rey the way I was using the Double Wide, which was really nice. Having a hardware option that is great for tracking, and then finding one that was great for like in the box if you're on the go, which is, you know, honestly speaking, for many people, that's maybe the only type of tool they can get. Maybe everything's in the box. So the El Rey is like the closest I ever got to the Double Wide's, experience. Aside from that, like I said, I love the distressors. I do think that there is a difference between the hardware and the plugin. I think the plugins do a really good job at like the attack and release, but there's still something about the box that just feels a little better. And I think that's where like I'm looking at hardware. Like, it has to make sense if you're going to spend that kind of money to actually say, you know what, it's doing something I couldn't really recreate in the box. We gave the TubeTech example earlier, where, funny enough, right now you're kind of living in a day where you could buy a brand new one and sell it for more as a used unit, which is stupid. Anybody that's paying $6,000 for a TubeTech, you really got to reevaluate your patience, because you could just wait 3 months and just get a brand new one for $1,000 to $2,000 less. But hey, if you want to buy mine for $2,000 more, you know, hit me up. I'll buy a new one and I'll wait. But with that said, I think the distressor hardware does something really cool where kind of like an 1176 where it breaks up the sound. I like using it for parallel compression where you really want to just like push it in, really just stab that audio right in there. And then you blend it back in with the original audio. And it does a really good job at that like very present, very forward sounding vocal where sometimes I will just not compress the original audio of the vocal. I'll just use a distressor as a hardware insert, bring that back into the mix, and I have the vocal exactly where I want it. It's just a beautiful piece for that.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. You're also, I'm thinking about like aggression with compression is for like 1176 on vocals. Yeah. I love how it's great for hip hop because the release is fast, the attack is fast,
yep.
grabs every single, makes syllable. the diction a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Every syllable is a little bit more precise. That aggression is great for that sort of stuff. If you're doing like a jazz track or a classical track, yeah, 1176 ain't it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, the slowness of release and attack is important for.
If you're doing
the
ballad
style.
Vocals, not really it.
Yeah, we'll just keep it at that. We're overgeneralizing, but let's see here. As far as like compression styles go, we've done an episode, I believe, and you can search this for in the past. Is how to hear compression and different ways to train your ears to hear compression.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you've noticed that we're talking about not just the style of the compression, like the attack and the release, the grab, the sustain there, but we're also talking about the color of the
box.
The color of the box. So like the saturation and how the attenuation is actually changing the tonal balance of a track.
Yeah. If you notice, we're not talking about the value of the compressor either.
Like the cost?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The value in our workflow, sure, but the value of its tag, I guess you can say, is not necessarily relevant.
Yeah.
To an extent.
And to put a, you know, put a contrasting opinion here real briefly, like this is kind of how I want you to think about, as the listener, how to think about this sort of stuff. Like Lou says that there's a difference between the outboard and digital versions of the distressor. I'm sure there is. But like, I don't want to cut it off to the absolute here, but I don't care for that difference, and I don't think that really impacts my decision. I use the digital distressors just the same, just as aggressively, and it works for me. Just to have a contrasting opinion there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. With compression styles, there's also mix bus stuff. I'm typically going for transparent. Don't use compressors on the mix bus as much as you'd like. You don't need it as much. Use them more on buses and individual tracks. I think that's better. If you over rely on mix bus compression, you're potentially killing the punch.
The balance.
There's like a lack of, like clipping keeps the song sounding more punchy than a compressor does. So that's just something to consider.
Actually, let's touch on that a little bit, just so, because I know there are people out there who I've had asked like what the difference between a clipper and a compressor is and why that's been communicated as the case as far as punch difference. Just to be clear, when we talk about compressors, we definitely don't mean any form of clipping whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like when clipping, we talk about clipping, yeah. We're talking about like distortion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, real briefly, compressors attenuate a signal. So anything that is on that kick drum transient that is getting compressed, including the vocal, if there's a snare hit as well, if there's a hi-hat hit, if there's a horn hit, doesn't matter. Anything in that small section of where whatever is triggering, going past the threshold, it's going to attenuate that entire signal. Doing too much, and if the release and attack is not set to be in line with the rhythm of the song or the general feel of the song, can sound pumpy. There's a compression pump, right, that can happen. With mm-hmm. clipping, you're literally just shaving off the top of the transient. So nothing else is actually being attenuated. So you're adding noise to the signal, potentially, but you still maintain the original velocity into that transient. You just lose the transient. But that integrity of the initial velocity in and out of that transient is the same. Thus, it can sound more transparent and has the feeling could potentially maintain the perception of punch, which is really important.
Yeah.
Cool. I kind of want to be done with this episode, Lou. I think I love compressors. Compressors are my favorite tool to use a lot more than EQ. I think to me, EQ is more utility, where like compression is like more creative and fun.
Yeah.
In different colors and styles. I do think if you want a suggestion here, we're not sponsored yet, but like Plugin Alliance is really cool. If you have to pick between one company to subscribe to, never get Slate. Waves is okay because everybody uses Waves. But if you have to pick one for a personal project, I think Plugin Alliance is the best one because you get the most amount of colors. It's not as user-friendly because they're like a bunch of emulations of old and current and new and different types of analog equipment. But you get the most, so the learning curve is there, is a little bit harder, but there's significantly more of a palette to choose from of colors and styles of compressors from the Plugin Alliance bundle. So go ahead and go there. Waves has a lot. The color palette is not as interesting, but they are they're useful in the sense that everybody has Waves. And if you learn how to use Waves, then you can mix anywhere if that's important to you. UAD is UAD. Okay. So on that note, I think that's kind of it for this episode. I don't really want to talk too much more on it. If there's only really one way to fuck up compression, and that's by setting and forgetting or using presets that people tell you to use or creating your own presets and like kind of leaving them without testing them. Make sure you bypass, you turn it back on, you listen for what it's doing. Again, the original point of compression is practical. It's to lower, automatically attenuate and even out the volume of a track. That's all it is. It's supposed to create headroom, right? By attenuating a track or a group, a collection of tracks, if you're compressing a bus, the things like saturation and the artifacts that it leaves is more of like a secondary quest for this compressor. In a perfect world, the compressors wouldn't have that, but it's something that we've learned to love and use to our advantage as engineers. Colors are really cool. Every tone has different. We didn't even talk about like. The Manly Varied Mu has this really cool tone that's different from, you know, an SSLG bus, which is different from 1176 saturation, which is different from the Magic Death Eye saturation, which is different from the L-Ray saturation, natural saturation, tonal balance, like the curves of the thing, which is, it can become really cool. Don't overthink it, but do things on purpose. Use compression on purpose. What are you listening for? It depends on what you want. Do you want aggression? Do you want color? Do you want this to sound crushed and compressed? Or do you want this to be super transparent? Because both are appropriate depending on the situations. There's not much more to talk about beyond that. Compression is a useful tool. You should use compression often, a lot. I mean, TZO is like, if you ever watch TZO Mix, that's a great example of like, if you think you're using a lot of compression, watch TZO Mix. He uses so much, it's ridiculous. You should be using compression. That's it. I think, anything else, Lou?
No, I think we hit it.
Cool. Thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Professionals spend nearly half the workweek on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.